What's the difference between DIY and doing it yourself? It's the difference between a part-time passion and a full-time business. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and the business tools you need to succeed. Let your ideas flow with AI that guides you but keeps you in the driver's seat. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Do it yourself. Go to Wix.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
I know what you're all thinking. How on earth are they going to fill somewhere between 60 and 90 minutes of Blue Moon Podcast after such a non-event of a Manchester derby last weekend? Well, never fear, everyone. We've got just what is needed for that situation. A bunch of men, all with microphones, whose opinions you didn't ask for, given an even bigger platform than normal. What could possibly go wrong? We'll discuss as much as we can from that derby on Sunday, but frankly, there's not a whole lot to say. So on top of that, we'll also be discussing Kevin De Bruyne's legacy at the Etihad after he announced just a few hours after the last show that he'll be leaving at the end of the season. And we'll look ahead to that game with Crystal Palace, hearing from comedian and Palace fan Andre Vincent. Plus, on top of all of that, we've heard this week that City's ticket prices will be frozen for next season. We'll talk about that and what it means for the future following protests and criticism from fan groups. Fun and games on the way, I promise. I'm David Mooney, and with me for this week's shenanigans, we've got two City fans. We've got KC, he's back.
You all right?
Not too bad, thanks KC, not too bad. And we're also joined by Gaz. Hi Gaz.
Hi, you all right?
Yeah, not too bad at all, not too bad. I thought with that 0-0 at Old Trafford, we'd start in the most obvious way. So most boring game you've been to. Gaz, any standouts for the dullest game you were at?
Standout one, to my mind, was one where I took my younger brother, who's like 17 years my junior, to his first ever game, and I thought I'd really sort of give him the City bug. And it was that... do you remember... we drew 0-0 at home against Liverpool. It was probably around... It was after takeover, 2010, 2011. Yeah. I remember absolutely nothing happened at all. And I thought, obviously, you know, with it being like a big-ish game with Liverpool and such. But I remember it just being a complete and utter damn squib. so that one comes to mind.
Yeah, I was at PSG in the... UEFA Cup run under Hughes, KC, and my only take home from that game was it was cold. Nothing happened. I don't know if you were there for that one.
I was there for that game. It was absolutely freezing. That was the first home game where United were at home the same night as City that the police allowed for 19 years. I think and to say that that's my main memory of the game tells you how
bad it was.
It was very, I think, the only thing I can remember, I think Makalele played for them and Daniel Sturridge played on the left or right wing for us, and that's the only takeaway from that game that I can possibly remember.
About as good as it got. Any other boring ones you're at?
There was a 0-0 under Mancini against Alex McLeish's Birmingham.
That was on my birthday.
Yeah, I think I've spoken about how boring that game was before, but that was tremendously bad. Like nothing happened in that game.
Yeah, that was on my birthday, and everyone got really annoyed because Mancini took Tevez off and brought Gareth Barry on when we were chasing a goal.
Yeah.
What a day. Right, so let's talk about another dull game, because there seemed to be very little adventure in that United game. And Gaz, Guardiola said afterwards that he was guarding against United's counter-attacks, because he talks all the time about how he's worried about pacing behind, and he said like the one thing United are good at is pacing behind. Is it fair to get a performance like that off if you're guarding against it, or was it just two teams who couldn't do anything?
Yeah, well, I mean, both can be true, can't they? I mean, I suppose in Guardiola's mind, it's about, creating a platform from which somebody can do something. And that the second part of that equation just didn't happen. I mean, if you were to look at the defensive performance, you'd say it was quite good, wouldn't you? I mean, and I suppose from Guardiola's perspective, he would have said, well, you know, I've given the forward players the platform to do something. I guess he would have been. That's why he was probably relatively happy, because the way he probably approaches it is that he's done his work, hasn't he? From that point, but whether he picked the right forward players to do something with that platform is like a different matter.
Yeah. Were you surprised how little cutting edge there was, Casey, given the names in that team? Or is that what we come to expect from them this season?
This season, no. It just sort of within the first, like, obviously United with Diaz getting booked in the first minute, that was probably the most exciting part of the whole game, wasn't it? Nothing seemed to really happen after that. I know Marmoush had a decent shot, but it was literally, you could just feel within, normally after about an hour in certain games, you feel it drifting away into nothingness. I felt that after about 5 minutes on Sunday. Mm. It was just, there was never anything going to happen, and you could tell. I think the players were kind of going through the motions a bit. They didn't, I know obviously, you know, bit of an old man thing to say, but, you know, a bit of a passion merchant. There wasn't a lot of passion from either side, really.
They couldn't, when there was a little bit of fisticuffs, they couldn't even do that properly. There was, yeah. Like, it was just a bit half-hearted.
Yeah, I think both sides want the season to be over. And you could see that in the way that both teams performed.
Yeah. Gaz, there was obviously that early scare. I mean, that probably sets Guardiola's alarm bells off that United can get in behind more than they actually did in the end. So is there that balance there? Because you talked about the defending. There was some very good defending in the second half. There was some very good in-the-box defending where they were getting in front of everything. Where's the balance here? Because if Guardiola opens it up a little bit more and City try and win that game, do they actually end up losing it?
Yeah, possibly. And, like, you know, there was those comments from Neville, weren't they, after where he was moaning about, oh, you know, nobody's taking a risk to go and win the game. But you know for a fact that if somebody took a risk and then they lost the game, then they would just have just been completely hammered. it was just that type of game. It's like, we'll think back to the Bournemouth game before. You know, Nunes took a risk, didn't he, by playing a crossfield pass in his own half, and they scored. You know, so it's very easy to say that, you know, you need to twist in these situations to get something from it. But it was just that type of game. And everyone sort of realised after about an hour, I think, I'm sure that you sort of had the same feelings I did. It's like, you just thinking, watching it, we just need to make sure we don't lose this. Like, you know, that was the number one objective. I know it sounds awful, but, like, whether we could have shown more adventure, yeah, maybe. But, you know, and we saw in the home, like, what can happen. So, you know, it's all 2020 hindsight to say you need to show a bit more adventure.
Yeah, they Diaz said afterwards that he was asked about kind of being troubled by United this season, and he made the point that the 14th. And a lot of fans have made the point that they were 14th. But it's like, it's not the same as playing a team like if Watford were 14th, for instance, is it, Casey? Because it is a Manchester derby. Things are different in these games.
You want the players to treat it differently as well, don't you? You don't, which again, you know, coming back to me as if I'm a passion merchant, which I'm not really. But when it comes to derbies, you do want derbies to be special. But I think even in the week building up, I can't think of a derby that was less talked about by anybody I knew. I don't think anybody was asked about it.
Yeah,
like, I don't know about you. Like, obviously, I know you cover it, you know, for your job and stuff. But, like, there wasn't any sort of, like, you know, conversations or chats or even just, you know, people bringing stuff up in the pub about it. There was just no talk about it really at all, was there?
Any crippling anxiety before it, Gaz?
No. I mean, you get the usual hate, don't you? You'll never that will sort of, like, bubble up in you throughout the day. But yeah, not really. I mean, I guess you know, you wouldn't want to lose or not win. I don't know if that's the right amount of knots. You know, a third game in a row, and you know, I guess, like, as well, like, if you've got, like, a sort of hierarchy of needs, you know, that pyramid, the bottom one for me is not losing against United. You know, tick that one off and then we'll see where you go from there. So I mean I had a bit of anxiety, but obviously nothing compared to recent games, like, you know, where much more was at stake. Yeah. I think as well, like, you know,
is that part of the problem, though, that the fact that neither team have got a lot at stake this season, that it kind of dulls it?
Well, the weird thing is like, we probably do have a fair bit at stake at the moment, don't we? Like, looking at that sort of league table, it's not looking great, to be honest. I think we'll do it. I think we'll get in the top five. But, like, we could have done with winning. You know, we can do win in all these games at the moment. So, yeah, that plays into it. I mean, you don't know. I mean, I'm sure if the game would have came to light after 10 minutes, you know, people would have been really gutted at not winning it, but it just didn't. So was what it was.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too long on this game, Casey, because there isn't a lot more we can say than what we've said already. But we were a little bit surprised at the lineup that Guardiola picked, given United's weaknesses this season and the freshness that City brought in the January transfer window. There was only Marmoush that started from the January signings, and that was only because Haaland was injured.
I wasn't surprised at all, no. I think his team selections have been sort of like Gaz has said, they've been there to lay the groundwork of a foundation. And that team just looked pretty steady away. I think the only person, and I didn't expect him to start, but who I would have liked to have started considering his performances recently, has been Grealish. You know, the couple of starts that he's had in the middle, he's played excellently, and then he's been immediately dropped for the next game. So I just think that's a strange message to be sending out to not just to Grealish himself, but to to the squad in general. But yeah,
if the plan is to keep the ball as well,
yeah.
Like, because these are players that should be able to keep the ball because they've done it for City for years, but they weren't able to. You'd think Grealish is one of those that can do that.
Yeah, but again, I can see the thinking. Even though Foden's been poor this season by his standards, I can see the thinking behind it. He's got such a good record in Manchester derbies, hasn't he? He's a local lad. You know, Pep is probably thinking, yeah, why wouldn't I start him? But yeah, he just didn't really offer anything, did he? Mm. But yeah, I'd like to see Grealish get a few more games before he probably goes in the summer, considering not just for sentimental reasons, but I think he's one of the few that's actually turning up at the minute when he does play.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about Foden widely in a bit, Gaz. And obviously De Bruyne was in there, and we'll talk about him later on as well. But it was almost a kind of a signifier of what's been wrong this season, especially from those two players. You had De Bruyne there, like, plugging away, but couldn't get anything, and Foden just couldn't affect the game.
No, as much as I love Phil Foden, don't get me wrong, I'm like absolute huge fan. If we would have bought him in summer, and you saw those performances this season, you would just be like, what on earth have we bought that? You know, he's just like so far off it. It's unbelievable. I don't think he even really understands what his sort of role in the team is at the moment. De Bruyne was a... I'm sure Pep doesn't sort of go off narrative and stuff, but did you feel as if he picked him because he said it was his last... He was going. I don't know. Yeah. It just felt as if, like, oh, you know, we're picking for the narrative. But he looked so slow, like, particularly when we were trying to, you know, transition from defence to attack, particularly given the fact that he was sort of playing as the forward. So he was sort of, you know, in that position, you have to sort of cover two parts of the pitch, don't you? And he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't get away from this man.
There was one point where he got the ball in, like, the middle of the pitch, whereas in the past he would have, you know, lengthened his stride, sort of drove through the middle of the pitch. And I think he did two steps that were of the old Kevin De Bruyne, and then he suddenly turned into Didi Haman. It was just, it was ridiculous. Like, it's just, and it's sad to see because, you know, obviously a club legend, but yeah, he just completely just, boots were just made of treacle all of a sudden. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Everybody saw it. That was the one bit that sticks in everyone's mind, wasn't it? I think as well what it showed is that, like, and again, like, you know, I think it's perfectly, you know, we have to sort of acknowledge Kevin De Bruyne is a complete legend. It's like it also showed why it wouldn't make sense to keep him around next year as like an impact sub, because you can't bring somebody on for an impact and then, you know, everyone has to drop 20 yards accordingly, you know, because he just doesn't have... I mean, he wasn't blessed with loads of pace, but he had a bit of power, didn't he, to get himself out of situations. And it's just all gone. It's just, you know, just unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Sunday was the sixth time that there's been a 0-0 draw in the Manchester Derby in the Premier League, and the 20th in all competitions since the two clubs were founded. We set Dan Burke the task of trying not to fall asleep while taking a look at the previous five Boer draws.
Sunday's Manchester derby was a proper snooze fest, and that's often what people will automatically assume of a 0-0 draw, but it's not always the case. The first time City and United played out a goalless game in the Premier League, there were two remarkable goal line clearances and a red card.
Saha takes the touch. It's straight away by Jordan.
has just hit off. What a save from the young lad. Stephen Gerrard. Ronaldo. Smith! McManaman. It must have been against the kiss of David James. It's instinctive from Steve McManaman.
That was when City went to Old Trafford in November 2004. It was a backs against the wall performance where both Richard Dunn and Sylvain Distan were brilliant, and both Stephen Jordan and Steve McManaman cleared off the line to preserve City's clean sheet. Alan Smith was sent off for United at the end. The next two nil-nils, though, were definitely on the dull side.
The only real chance I thought was the Zabaleta one, which was lucky to come to, you know, on his left foot when Jon O'Shea like fumbled the ball away. Yeah, I would say that he has sorted the defence out, but what everyone seems to be complaining about is the fact that we don't create enough chances, and if we do score, it's... there's always an element of luck in it.
That's Paul Atherton speaking on the podcast after a dour 0-0 draw with United at Eastlands in November 2010. It was similar when neither side could break the deadlock at Old Trafford in October 2015. The Richard Burns could see the positives.
To come away with a point, to have gone top of the league and to have not lost any ground there, that's a good result. The performance wasn't great, but there's an element of it where it is nice to know that we've actually got a bit of pragmatism about us now, that if needed... it's available. It's not always been one of the strengths of a team of our team under Pellegrini. So that's not to say that it was particularly welcome on Sunday, but it's sort of reassuring to know that we've got it in the locker if we need to call on it again. But hopefully we won't have too many games that dull this season.
That was in Pellegrini's final season. The next nil-nil was around 18 months later, and it was Pep Guardiola's first at the Etihad. United, now managed by Jose Mourinho, had very little intention to do anything except defend.
I'm pretty sure United came here to try to win the game. We played to win the game. We tried, but again, we are not able, so we're not able. You have to look why we're not able to win again. So it's 1 point, and the big fight will be until Watford game.
Have you ever played a derby where one team has sat back as much as that?
In my career as a manager, I play against all the teams in different styles. So I'm not here, believe me, to judge what my opponents want to do.
Perhaps that was a case of Guardiola letting everybody read between the lines about Mourinho's approach. There was some drama, though. Marouane Fellaini was sent off for a headbutt on Sergio Aguero, while Gabriel Jesus had a stoppage time winner ruled out for offside. Before Sunday, the most recent Manchester derby 0-0 came in lockdown. City were having a bit of a difficult start to the season and had won only 5 of their first 10 games. Since it was in lockdown, the press conference was on Zoom, which makes Guardiola a little difficult to hear.
We know we can go through more intensity, but we know when you are not settled down properly, when you attack, they punish you in the counter-attack. So they are so fast. It's the quality for Man United. So yeah, we would have loved to have more chances, but when you review the chance we had with Gabriel, with Rice, and especially when we had Maret in the first half, one against one, I went the keeper, so we have to build from here.
Not long after this dreadful match at Old Trafford, City would go on a 15-game winning streak, which would be the platform for them to reclaim the title from Liverpool. It would turn out to be a good footing for the remainder of the season, something we can only hope that last Sunday also proves to be. Otherwise, it might just have been the most pointless 90 minutes of all of our lives.
I'm Clyde Tilsley. Yeah, I know. Yeah, balmy night, Barcelona, all that. Yeah, that Clyde Tilsley. You're listening to the Blue Moon podcast. Enjoy.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was Dan Burke. I mean, you'd listen to those five, KC. Perhaps this is the worst 0-0 of all, because in some of them, and I'm thinking kind of like the 2010 one with Mancini, when the year before that City had lost three derbies in the last minute, and so like Mancini had decided they're not losing this one, so they drew 0-0. I'm thinking the Guardiola one in his first season, where Mourinho came, had a game plan, and was just decided that City weren't going to score, and City like really plugged away and tried. Those at least had a little bit of one narrative. Team trying, yeah, a bit of narrative and one team kind of going for it. This one, like, it was just two teams who weren't up to much.
It was just like, it wasn't even like two drunk guys fighting over a sandwich, was it? It was two drunk guys falling asleep next to a sandwich. I'm quite impressed how long we've actually managed to talk about this game, because absolutely nothing happened. Like, it was...
A couple of those nil-nils had red cards in. That would have been an interesting point, yeah.
There was... Like, I think the fact that... I suppose the Marmoush shot that was straight down someone's throat is the main takeaway from a game. And normally you'd have that as, you know, first couple of minutes, somebody getting a sight before you start get going. Just nothing happened. Mm. Like, there was no narrative either. There was no niggling in the build-up to it, really, was there? There was just, it was just, everything about it was a nothing.
Mm. There's been plenty of derbies, though. I think there has been plenty of derbies with Little on them. I think we've just forgotten them. Do you know which ones they are, actually? The Burton coming out here. They're all the ones that Solskjaer won, that they all wave about, but none of them ever mattered at all in the big scheme of things. I think they even include, like, there was like a second leg of a League Cup tie in that, wasn't there, which they won but got knocked out. Like, there have been these derbies that haven't really meant anything in a wider sense. I mean, they obviously matter in and of themselves, really, but I mean, we've had a few of them in recent years where we've either, you know, been well ahead in the title race or whatever. They do happen, they just don't stick in the memory, and I doubt this one will either.
Yeah. A couple of issues to sort out from the game. Gaz, the Foden chants were particularly loud throughout from the TV. Guardiola said afterwards that it was the fans lacking class. Foden was also seen putting his hand to his ear and kind of conducting the crowd. What do you make of everything?
I don't know what else he could have done, really. I mean, you're just putting a, you know, you're besides scoring, that would have been nice, you know, and giving it back. I don't know how else you can respond to it. It's just a bit. I mean, you've had a lot of reactions to it, haven't you? Saying, "Oh, come on, it's the football. We've always done this." I mean, it's true to an extent, but like. And I'm not really clutching my pearls over it either, but it's just, in fact, it's the opposite. It's just a bit boring, isn't it? Like, you know, that kind of, I know it's massively misogynistic and personal, but at the same time, it's just like, there's no real humour around it, is there? You know, it's not like in keeping with that. It's just like, you know, and it comes from because, like, there's a viral video that went around social media a couple of years ago where she's wearing, like, a low-cut top. But so, you know... People think it's fine to sort of use that word about her. It's just the pitch, really. But I was going to say, what can you do? I guess it's just not join in when you hear it. It's just, I mean, but we've had like, you know, we're not above it ourselves. Like, you know, there's nothing else he could have done. But I think like overwhelming feeling towards it is just like, it's completely humourless and misogynistic.
Mm. Say what? I mean, your post was say what you want about misogyny, but you wouldn't even know United had fans in the ground without it.
Well, that was the other thing, wasn't it? Like, you know, permit me to bit a bit more. That's the only time you heard them through the telly. You could only hear the City fans the rest of the time. Is when they all decided to, you know, say something about their grandmother. There you go.
I know it's you know, a bit shite to say, but you just expect that of football fans, really. I suppose, you know, the only saving grace is the fact that a big deal is being made out of it. A bit more is probably slightly better than it was in the past. You don't hear them as much as you used to. But yeah, there's not really much to say. It's just more like Gaz said. It wasn't even you know, witty at all, was it? And, you know, United fans, you know, aren't famed for the humour at all, are they, the boring bastards? So it's just, it's just a bit shit all around from a shit bunch of fans.
Yeah. Well, after we published last week's show, Kevin De Bruyne announced that he's leaving City at the end of the season. So we put the call out on social media this week to hear your best memories of him in a blue shirt.
Hi, I'm Alex, and my favourite Kevin De Bruyne goal is his equaliser away at Real Madrid in the first leg of the Champions League semi-final tie in the treble winning season 2022-23.
Hi, it's Tony from Manchester. My favourite KDB moment is the nutmeg against Sunderland.
Hi, Matt here. In terms of goals, there are two that stand out to me as being my favourites, the first of which is Newcastle in 2019. Kev on the outside of the area has chested the ball down and sublimely followed it off the crossbar and past Dubravka in what is a true moment of magic.
City were 1-0 down in that game, having kind of dominated the first half, so it kind of felt like, oh, here we go again. And then second half, 67th minute, the ball just falls to De Bruyne outside the box and he absolutely hammers it.
He actually gets nudged in the back and miscontrols it and then steadies himself with his left foot. And then as he twists, puts his right foot on it, drags it back, and in the same movement then flicks it through the onrushing Sunderland defender.
There's a clip going around on social media at the minute of a City fan in that away end where they shouted, "Hit it," at the exact moment that De Bruyne shot.
Hello, it's Adam Monk here. Everyone's paying tribute to Kevin De Bruyne for obvious reasons. My main memory of Kev, besides the goals and the assists and all the excellence on the pitch, is a bit more of a specific memory. A personal one, actually, from when I worked at Manchester City. He was my first ever interview, the player that I first ever interviewed in my career when I was just 21 years old.
The second is Norwich in 2020. Kev played a lovely bit of skill, let the ball roll under him onto his right foot and smashed it from distance past the keeper to the applause of an empty crowd.
Hey, this is Shane with the ATL Citizens in Atlanta, Georgia. My favourite Kevin De Bruyne moment is at home versus Stoke 2017. KDB is charging up through the middle. He doesn't even look up, but he sends this physics-defying through ball to the back post to Leroy Sané, and Leroy just smashes it home. Thank you so much, Kevin, for that memory and for just a world full of memories. We're going to miss you so much.
It was at Newcastle away. It was the fact that after the game we'd won 2-0, he'd scored a penalty in that match in the FA Cup. Steve Bruce gatecrashed the interview. He walked down the touchline, and I sort of saw him coming towards us. And I thought, oh God, here we go. I wasn't experienced at the time in the field. And he came, put his arm around Kevin, said that he's joining Newcastle United. Needless to say, he didn't.
He's going to stay here and come here, OK? That's an exclusive out of Newcastle tonight. He's had enough of Manchester City and he's going to come play Newcastle.
Hi, I'm Luciano and these are my top two Kevin De Bruyne moments. 16-17 match winner against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. That was a really tight game. Otamendi plays the ball to Jesus. De Bruyne 1-2 with Jesus. Left foot, top corner, bang.
Hi, I'm Joe Butterfield, and my favourite Kevin De Bruyne moment is not so much a moment as it is the whole game. The home game versus Spurs in 2017-18.
Hello, my name's Alex, and my KDB moment comes from April 2024, an away game at Brighton. It was coming to crunch time in the Premier League. We were behind Arsenal and couldn't afford to drop a single point. I was nervous going down to the game, took me all day to get there, and we started fairly shakily, but then Kevin De Bruyne started doing Kevin De Bruyne things.
Well, it was the game where David Silva wasn't available to play, or one of the first games where he wasn't available to play because of obviously his son Mateo being born prematurely. During the game, not long after Dele Alli, I think it is, goes through him, he then, within a couple of minutes, goes up the other end and drills in the most sort of vicious left-footed shot.
He stepped up in the big moment with a flying header. Not a very typical De Bruyne goal, but what was typical was that he stepped up in that moment. And if he and others like him hadn't stepped up, then his generation of players would be sitting there with one or two Premier League titles rather than six.
Hi, my name's Ben. My favourite memory of De Bruyne actually comes from the 2018 season. United had coughed up the title by losing to West Brom. It was the game afterwards that City were playing Swansea. I'd got a ticket and I had a nightmare getting there. Missed the first two goals and I'd had that kind of, I'm not sure if the game's done at this point. De Bruyne has this quality of, I'll decide when the game's over. I'll decide when the game's finished.
Hi, I'm Amos Murphy from the City Ramble, and my favourite Kevin De Bruyne moment, excluding the obvious trophy-winning, game-winning, league-winning picks, I'm going to go for the 2016-17 season. his performance against Bournemouth.
Hi, name's Jules. My favourite KDB moment is the 1920 League Cup semi-final second leg against United.
City won 4-0 in that game. He got a goal and an assist, but he was the architect behind all four of those goals. He went underneath the wall for a free kick to open the scoring. He got two pre-assists. He got an assist for an Ilkay Gundogan goal late on.
Won the first leg 3-1. We go 1-0 down at the second leg at the Etihad. Nicolas Otamendi, stupid tackle, edge of the box. Kevin De Bruyne's reaction was just priceless. Waving his hands, shaking his head, telling Nico in no uncertain terms what an idiot he'd been.
He's picked up the ball probably about 25 yards out on the right-hand side, cut it in on his left, and it had just gone straight-lined from his laces all the way from the right to the top left-hand corner. It was a thing of beauty. It was amazing.
Guardiola said that Kevin De Bruyne, excluding Lionel Messi, is one of the greatest players he's ever worked with. But remember, this was what, 2-3 months into Pep Guardiola's career as City manager, and if that doesn't go to show the level he was playing at and has continued to play at throughout his Manchester City career, I don't know what will.
Hi, I'm Diego. I'm from Mexico City. On January 22, my mom got sick with COVID, and she was really bad. She had to be hospitalized. Things weren't looking good, and we were all really scared. And that week, City played Chelsea on Saturday at 6:30 a.m. in Mexico. And when Kevin hit that ball and gave us the win, I celebrated like a madman. And that goal and that celebration made me feel like everything was just going to be fine and that my mom was going to be fine. He has many more important goals, but that one really struck with me because of what it meant to me.
Hello, this is Jason Manford and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
So, Gaz, we talked a bit earlier on about how it was a little bit of a sad sight to see Kevin De Bruyne on the pitch at Old Trafford and the way it was going for him. So let's talk about the better times. Like, best memories of De Bruyne in a City shirt, goals, assists, even just, like, general moments. Anything that springs to mind immediately.
I remember when he joined, it took me ages to figure out what his strong foot was. That was really interesting. Like, I think he's probably, I know, like, you know, people are hyperbolic about things, but like, I think he's probably the best weak-footed player I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, so many of his, like, I think he's officially right-footed, isn't he? But so many of his screamers have come off his left foot. It's unbelievable. And great passes as well. Hmm. And also, like, so best memory, the link-up he had with Haaland a couple of years ago in that season. Like, you know, remember when Haaland came back from injury about February?
Yeah.
And the two of them, they were, like, laying each... Like, he was putting in amazing stuff for Haaland, you know, to run onto. And Haaland was dropping deep and De Bruyne was running beyond him. And we got so many goals in that sort of period from them two, just being on that same wavelength, which we've never got back to those heights since, really. That's what I think I remember most strongly.
Yeah, I had Adam from Stat City run the data of, send me over the data of every single Kevin De Bruyne goal that he scored. He scored 74 with his right foot, 29 with his left foot. So like it's still like a fairly like heavily weighted towards his right foot. But an interesting quirk, City never lost a game when he scored with his left foot.
Okay.
There you go.
Should have shot with his left more.
Should have shot with his left more. Casey, any favourite memories?
I think aside from, you know, trophies and the big matches and stuff like that, just the sheer pleasure of watching a footballer, I think the Stoke 7-2 game would be hard to beat. That was just absolutely magnificent watching him in that game. Like, he just glided across the ground. Every single pass, like that pass for Sane in that game was just, I think that's probably the best pass the Premier League's ever seen. It's just unbelievable. Yeah, that game, he was just an absolute delight to watch. Aside from that, it's just like, I touched on it earlier that it had gone when we were talking about the derby earlier. But yeah, one of the most underrated things was, and I think that we've sort of missed it over the past, you know, past couple of years, is when he gets the ball and just driving through the centre of the pitch when we have a potential counter-attack on or something like that.
His ability to do things at top speed.
Just wonderful. Wonderful player. I remember one time, I think it was West Brom, but it might have been Sunderland, But there was one where James McLean, and I don't want to get into a James McLean slagging thing because, you know, I don't do anything. But like he tried to chop Kev down as he was marauding through the centre of the pitch, and just got nowhere near him. Now, and I think we scored from it or something. And
I thought that was West Brom, but yeah,
That's what I said. It was that's what I said. I thought it was West Brom.
Yeah.
And I remember he ran. Did Kev run back afterwards and like sort of have a go at McLean about it? But yeah, so that's another strange memory. And yeah, just he scored some worldies against Spurs as well, like specifically where he'd like shift it from his right to smash one on his left. But yeah, like there's just hundreds of great memories that he's given us.
Can I chuck in Gaz as well? Wolves away. When it was supposed to be a difficult game, and he just pops in three goals with his left foot in the first 25 minutes or so.
Yeah, I saw someone that 7-2, by the way, the best performance that you could remember, Kieran. I wasn't there. That one was at Chester Races. I remember just looking at my phone. Oh look, it looks like we're playing well. The Wolves one, someone shared a video of that online the other day, like the sort of highlights of every touch in that game, and that's ridiculous. The one you were talking about, the one where he scored four and also hit the post,
and assisted,
and also I think Foden and Sterling missed sitters as well, which would have given him a couple of extra assists as well. Yeah, that was just amazing. Yeah, good player, wasn't he?
Yeah, not bad.
But I have to say, what a bastard to announce he was leaving after 10 years on my birthday. What an absolute twat.
Is there an argument, Gaz, for best ever Premier League player? Is he better at his job than anybody else in the Premier League has been better at their job?
Oh God, I hate all these sort of subjective sort of things because you just is he best at his job than anyone else has been? Is he a better midfielder than like Thierry Henry was a forward? I don't know. I hate to say it, Ronaldo. Yeah, probably as good as them, you know, really. I think the one thing I'll say is that he's like all things considered the best we've had, you know, like just from doing it for over 10 years, like, and like, let's face it, like there's only been a bit of a drop in those 10 years. I think the highest I've ever seen a City player operate at was still Yaya Toure in 2014. But De Bruyne probably operated just under that level for a much longer period of time.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So difficult to say, but here's
a question for you, Moon. Do you think, like, considering, obviously, you know, I think with the statues that's coming or whatever, so the statues that we've got outside the ground, because we've got, you know, Silva, obviously, you know, apart from, you know, the Mercer and Allison players that we've got, do you think, like, the Silva company and Aguero statues, they should have been together? Because now it just looks like we're just fucking chucking out Sabutio characters all over the show, doesn't it?
The terracotta army around the
exactly, yeah. That would have been a better analogy, mate, yeah. So do you think, would you go so far as to say name a stand after him or something?
No, I'd get a statue up there. I honestly think you can make the case for the best player City have ever had. So whack a statue up there.
He just doesn't have enough riz to justify a statue in my mind. Do you know what I mean? What does a statue of Kevin De Bruyne look like?
Just him shouting, "Let me talk."
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what would be more apt, really. I mean, he does like, I mean, I hate to say this, like, he does seem like, you know, a bit of a bad hang as a human being, to be honest. Not that there's anything wrong with him, but just sort of like, oh God, you know, he's so, like, it's almost to a fault, isn't it? Whenever he's sort of interviewed, like, you think, oh my God, your mindset is just so purely about, you know,
being professional.
And being sort of mentally bulletproof. There's not really too much to work with in terms of, like, any artistry about him.
I think the lasting image that you go with is, I suppose, is, you know, when he scored that in the away at Chelsea, and he ran out. You know, when their fans have been giving him stick, like he runs away with his finger in the air for that one, like as if to say, "Shut the fuck up." And I think that's probably the one that they'd go with if it was to guess.
That'd be a good one. Him rolling his socks up when Villa have just gone 2-0 up. Have you ever seen that image? That's a good one.
Yeah.
But I think that probably sums
it up. He was superb in that comeback. Like he was just not letting that game go at all, was he?
No, not at all. Well, there's just before we move on.
It's a quiz on Kevin De Bruyne at City.
There we go. Didn't think you were going to get away with that, did you? Really, honestly. When there's a week where there's nothing to talk about, I've obviously got to fill the show with something. KC, you look mightily pissed off, so I'm going to let you go first. Pick a number 1 to 6.
6.
Number 6, okay. Which team has conceded the most goals to Kevin De Bruyne while he's been at City?
I'm between Wolves, Newcastle and Spurs. I'll go Spurs.
Spurs he's gone for. No, you didn't even name the team that he scored the most goals against. It's Arsenal.
All right.
Yeah, loves a goal against Arsenal. So swing and a miss. Gaz, over to you. 1 to 5 left. What are you going for?
5.
Number 5. Okay, name one of the two songs used by a pair of Spanish commentators when they sang Kevin De Bruyne's name on their broadcast after his goals at Crystal Palace last season.
What?
This is right. So if you haven't even heard the story, you've got no chance with this. There were two Spanish commentators that were commentated on City versus Palace last season. De Bruyne right. scored twice, and they sang a song with his name in it for each of the goals. All I want to know is what tune. Pick one of the two songs. What tune did they sing it to?
Seven Both? Nation Army.
No, not quite. Oh. No, you could have had 8 days a week, or you could have had Go West.
Right, okay.
Well, I'll play them to you afterwards. They're fantastic. So another swing and a miss. KC, over to you. 1 to 4.
1.
Number 1. Okay. Who were the first team that Kevin De Bruyne scored against for City by hitting a free kick under the wall?
Bournemouth.
It was Bournemouth. Did it again against Cardiff in the FA Cup a bit later. That was on telly. The Bournemouth game wasn't, so nobody remembers that one apart from KC. So 1-0. Gaz, over to you. 2, 3 or 4 left.
3.
Number 3. Okay, number 3. How did Kevin De Bruyne fail to take a corner at Arsenal in December 15?
How did he fail to do it?
Yeah, what did he do that meant he failed to take the corner?
Did he fall over into it?
I'm minded to give you that. He kicked the corner flag.
Yeah, I was going to say kick the corner flag.
No,
yeah.
No, I don't think that's right, is it? I don't think that's
no,
right.
No, give it him, it's fine.
Yeah. I think you can have that because he did fall over into
it. Yeah, you can have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So 1-1. KC, over to you. 2 questions left. You can have number 2 or number 4. I will say one of these questions has already been answered on the show, so you could get lucky.
Number two.
It's not that one. Against which team did Kevin De Bruyne score his first headed Premier League goal?
Oh bloody hell! I can't even think of one. Burnley.
No, it was his only headed Premier League goal. He's got a diving header away at Brighton.
That was back end of last season. Back end of not last season, the year before, wasn't it?
Yeah, great header. So, Gaz, that leaves you with a question that we should already know the answer to. Question number 4. On which ground did Kevin De Bruyne score his first and only City hat-trick?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Molyneux.
It was Molyneux, congratulations.
Jesus Christ.
It could have been during one of the many parts my Wi-Fi has knocked out during this, so there was a chance I would have got it wrong.
That
what,
was,
you spoke but... about it? Oh,
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. And we're very sorry about that.
So, time now to look ahead to the game with Crystal Palace. KC, Crystal Palace at home in the 12:30 kickoff. What could possibly go wrong?
Everything. I'm expecting us to play in a similar way that we did on Sunday. And you'd like to think that being at home, we'd get more chances going forward. And I expect that's the way Pep's going to play. I don't know. Don't know about you.
Yeah. It's not like Palace haven't caused problems for City at the Etihad, Gaz. They've really caused problems for City under Guardiola. In a season where City are causing themselves problems as well, it's not exactly one that we should look forward to, I don't think.
No, it's, all these, they're part of that profile of team who've done us this year, aren't they? You're sort of super well organised and not untalented, upper half, mid-table type side. Yeah, they've caught up to us and we've got worse.
Yeah. Yeah, they're one of the form teams of the Premier League at the moment as well. From the 1st of January 2025, Palace are the third best in the league behind only Liverpool and Arsenal. So it's like, it's not a...
That's not a surprise, really, though.
They had a really bad start to the season, but after that, they've been good.
They're a good side with a good manager. I think obviously the loss of Elise in the summer contributed as well to that bad start, didn't it? But they're a good team. They might cause us a lot of problems, which is fully why I expect Pep to be very cagey. Again, same as he was on Sunday.
Yeah, there is something to be said about the caginess, though, Gaz, because the performance wasn't great on Sunday, but they got a point. And like on the sly, City have done all right in the last few weeks or so. They're now one defeat in seven. They've had wins away at Bournemouth and Spurs in that time, and the only defeat is against Forest. So they're kind of slyly building something.
But Spurs and Bournemouth are two of the worst teams form-wise, aren't they, in the league? Like, if we're talking about Palace being in good form, haven't Bournemouth got the worst form in the league? Aside from the relegated ones.
I was going to say, I think Southampton and Leicester might want a word for
that. We've kept a fair few clean sheets, haven't we, recently? So, there's obviously something. Pep's cooking something at the back.
The way that you spat that out was brilliant.
Well, that's how us young people talk.
We've been critical of the approach against United. And they're obviously a team that has pace on the break, and we have to be, like you say, we worry about Eze. They will be without Eddie Nketiah and Mark Gay, though. They're both suspended.
One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark Gay, you're doing him a tremendous disservice there to be putting him on the same level as Nketiah.
But he's been part of their defence all season. It's a team game.
No, that's what I'm saying. Mark Gahey is a lot better than Nketiah. That's what I'm saying. You're doing him a disservice by lumping him in with that shit.
Oh, sorry, the other way around. Sorry.
Yeah, Nketiah is... Yeah, God, he's... Yeah, crap. Obviously, he'll somehow manage to be fit for the weekend and score now.
But he's not allowed to play, so it's fine.
Yeah, but he's absolutely shite, I think. But Mark Gahey, I really rate. So yeah, hopefully we'll get a bit of joy then against them, because yeah, I think he's a really good player. I expect him to leave Palace in the summer as well. I don't know who's going to spend the money on him, but it'll take a lot of money to get him off him, because I think he's an excellent player.
Yeah. With that in mind, Gaz, is it a case of, like, it seems to be a case of either Doku and Savinho or all the old fellas in the middle. So like, which way round is it going to be this weekend?
He won't play that midfield again. I think, I think you'll see Doku come back in. He might go to Grealish. Why not? Mm.
I'd like to see Grealish and Savinho play.
Yeah. The weird thing is that like with Haaland out, it kind of gives us a bit more options in how we play, doesn't it? Really, in sort of who we can select around it. It won't be quite as dad's army as it was last week. No.
Yeah, the outcome's the same though, isn't it, Casey? Like, you either have Doku and Savinho and Grealish creating nothing from the wings, or you have the old fellas in the middle creating nothing from the centre.
As miserable as I am, I can't think quite that badly. Going to getting up out of bed for the early kickoff on Saturday morning. Obviously, I'll be up early anyway because I've got a young child. But I will be, yeah, I've got to at least trick my brain into being more hope that the game is going to be more exciting. Otherwise, I'd despair if you knew in advance that you were getting what happened on Sunday, then I don't think you'd bother your arse going, would you? But and the other thing as well is obviously, you know, wonder how many people are going to be there as well with the amount of advertising. I don't know about you guys, but I've just been bombarded with text messages from the club trying to get us to buy extra tickets for the weekend. Mm. So what's the atmosphere going to be like? Is that going to have an effect on the game?
On a Saturday 12:30 as well. Not fantastic. Gaz, the bigger picture time as well is, the table, Forest, 57 points in third. I think they're gone. I don't think City are getting anywhere near that. But then you've got fourth, Chelsea, 53 points. Fifth, Newcastle, 53 points with a game in hand. Sixth, City, 52 points. And seventh, Villa, 51. They're gonna have to start winning some games soon.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you have to sort of take Villa out of that equation, really, because they'll only get in if we don't do what we need to do. Yeah. I mean, looking at, Newcastle, that's a worry, particularly with their game in hand. Chelsea are liable to drop points. I'm trying to think if we have either of those to play. We don't do. We've played them both, haven't
we? We've got Villa.
That might help us in a way, really, actually. You know, we've got a bit of a gentle run in, haven't we, comparatively. It might actually help us that we aren't playing these teams in sort of playoffs because they'll be well up for it.
A couple of them also play each other as well. I know Chelsea play Villa. Right. I think Newcastle play Villa as well. So, like, they all have in that kind of, someone's going to have to lose points somewhere.
I mean, I think we'll do it because I think nobody is going to put on a run of, you know, back-to-back wins, you know, from now to the end of the season.
Least of all, City.
Yeah, but I think we're most likely to do it. I mean, we'll, you know, win our own games. Yeah, I think we should be okay.
And Chelsea don't look great shakes at the minute anyway, do they, either?
No, I think when those teams go away, they'll probably... Newcastle are probably much better, aren't they? Set up to sort of, like, you know, grind the way through stuff while Chelsea are a bit Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay, so are you feeling confident about the end, or?
Yeah, I think we'll do it, but I think purely for similar reasons, I think we'll do just about enough to limp over the line. I don't think we'll do it in any spectacular fashion. I think we've got, like Gaz has already said, we've got a decent run in, and I think we've just about got the nous to do it off muscle memory alone, really, as well. Mm. I think out of those sides, I think Newcastle and Villa are probably better placed, that not in terms of points wise, but Newcastle and Villa are a much better side than Chelsea. I think in the long term, I think Villa have just been hampered by obviously their tremendous Champions League run. And it looks like, obviously, from the result last night, that's going to come to an end. So are they going to start picking up more points as well? Or, again, that them going out might deflate them and they might fall off a cliff. You don't know, really, what's going to happen, do you? So,
yeah. Well, we'll do the charity bet shortly. But first, let's check in with comedian and Palace fan Andre Vincent ahead of Saturday's game. I started by asking him why it's been going so well for them recently.
It's been that incredible roller coaster of us being so high. Just kind of, you know, beating everyone, knocking Fulham out the semis was just immense. And then that last week, you know, drawing against the team that went out, that got relegated the fastest ever in the Premiership. I mean, it is so Palace, isn't it? That we're just going, yeah. Oh, we just lost to, drew to Southampton. Nearly. A lucky goal in the last sort of 5 minutes, but... So there is that part of me thinks that was our moment of shitness that we always do. And hopefully we will bring it. I mean, you know, your Viking is just sitting in El Hala, isn't he? Just El Hala, just drinking by the looks of things. He's given up.
What happened with Brighton? Because obviously Palace beating Brighton's always a good day for you.
Yeah.
And then end of the game, just like looks like all hell broke loose. What happened?
I just think it is that little bit of spirit that we have against Brighton that we were so determined. I mean, I've no idea what Eddie was up to. I mean, the dive. I mean, everyone says, "Oh, but he got clipped." Yeah, but he did take a bit of a. It was a dive. There's no doubt. And then I think the second one, I mean, that was a thing. Everybody said that the first one shouldn't have been a yellow. And the second one, I think the second one for me was, he just put his foot out. He didn't know he was running in. I think that's the dodgy decision on the second. And as for Mark, he deserved to go off as well. So that'll be interesting. I was going to say
you'll be without them, so that'll be interesting. Yeah.
Well, Eddie, we can do without. I mean, Gay at the back. That's our talisman at the moment. He really is. He is such a major part. That could be it. That could be our point. Maybe. I mean, it's so strange. So strange at the moment. I've got to tell you this. I'll do my little name dropping.
Excellent.
I watched the semi-finals in the Bahamas, as you do. And then the next day I watched the Villa semi in a bar in Miami, and there were these Villa fans watching it, and they were just so, oh, we've got this, this is easy, oh, this is brilliant, we're going to do PSG, we are so going to do PSG next week, we are going to do them. And then the draw came up and it said Villa v Palace. They went, Palace, oh, we won't win that. I was roaring. The idea that the Palace were better than PSG in the Villa's minds.
I just look at those semi-finals though as well. You got like Forest and City on the other side, and I sat there as a City fan going, well, I don't really want Forest, I don't really want Palace, I don't really want Villa. Like, how have we become the fourth choice in this?
It is a weird, isn't it? I mean, that could be it. Could it be that you do us this weekend, and then it's us in the final, and then we turn you over in the final, or we do you the weekend, you turn us over.
We're going to get there first, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. At the beginning of the season, who would have said maybe Villa? I mean, City. I would have said, yeah, all the way to the final, but I would have also said all the way to the championship. And then I would never have thought that we would make the semis. I'd never have thought Forest would have made the semis. Villa, they were, well, we absolutely trounced them at the end of the last season. So, yeah, even them, you know, I mean, they've had a corking season as well.
Yeah, just looking at the form guide, Palace are the form team in the Premier League at the moment. Did you know that?
Do you know, it's us and Wolves. I think we've taken the same points. We've taken 13 points in the last six games or five games. Same as them, but we're in London. We're the top team. If it was a London league, we'd be right up there. But we are. I cannot fault them at the moment.
Why is it happening then? What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, you kind of look at it and you think, you know, we didn't win the first eight games. We were so bad, and everybody was, you know, Glasner out. He had his little lightning in the bottle at the end of last season. And then what's happened? I've got no idea. We just turn it around and we've just been, you know, there was that whole thing of everybody saying, well, it's just taken us time to get used to Alessi going, you know. But we just, I just love watching them as well.
When this game is played, so it's played on Saturday, the 12th of April. So we're getting towards mid-April. You've lost two games out of every game you've played in all competitions since Christmas. That's mad. Even City don't do that.
You should be mentioning Real Madrid at this moment, or not Palace. Isn't that strange? I've just never known anything like it. I mean, everyone's now want Glasner to stay forever. I actually saw there was a. Somebody wanted signatures to make sure that we signed him for. But yeah, I don't know what's happening. I mean, even Franco, you know, after all, we've had him for 18 months, all the way from Brazil, told he was going to be the magic thing, comes on and gets us out of the, you know, draws us in Southampton. Fantastic. I don't know. We just have it at the moment. And therefore, as like any Palace fan, I know it's got to end.
Yeah. Who are the dangerous players right now? Because obviously we've talked about a couple of players that are missing. Who are likely to cause the damage at the weekend?
Walton, keep an eye out for him. Adam just on fire. If Hughes is playing, I think Will Hughes is the most underrated midfielder in the Premiership. I think he's fantastic. I put him above Walton, and everybody's making such a fuss about him.
He was great in the reverse game, wasn't he, when we came to your place and burgled the 2-2.
Yeah. I don't know. Who else? Muniz. I love watching Danny. I think he's fantastic. Scored the other day. Scored against Brighton, which is good. And obviously, Eze, you got to keep an eye out for him. I mean, he's just on fire. This is the thing now, though. This is the typical thing of we have these wonderful moments, and now it's just, do we hold on to these players? I mean, it's all very well. We're not going to win anything. It'd be lovely if we can lift the FA Cup. I can't see it, but we've had a lovely run. You know, we're still going to end up mid-table. That's the thing. You know, we're above Bangor.
I was going to say this. Because, like, if you'd not had the start of the season that you had, it just underlines how bad the start of the season was. Because you're now mid-table. What could you achieve between now and the end of the season? Is it the FA Cup is that unrealistic? Is it?
Well, that hopefully is the thing. Yeah, I think we could. Yeah, we've absolutely ripped Villa apart so many times in the last four meetings. I think we've absolutely taken them, and. So I think we'll get to the final, touch wood, and then and then I think it's going to be you lot. I think you'll turn over Forest. So yeah, hopefully. But when you look at us, we've been above Man United, above Tottenham. Like you say, lost two games since Christmas, and we're only 11th.
Mm. Above Brentford as well. Brentford with a game in hand.
Oh wow! Yeah, I mean yeah. They're a good championship team. I mean, you know, yeah. We were offered Ollie Watkins and said no. from Brentford. No, but this weekend, I think I'm going to say a draw. I think we're going to draw this. I got a feeling. And I'd never say that. You know me, I'd usually go 4-1 to the City. But I think we're going to go on equal peggings.
How will he approach it, do you think? Because City this season have had trouble with teams that have sat in deep and also with teams that haven't sat in deep. So what will he do?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be interesting with Gaye because I think we play that 3-5 so well with Gaye there as our centrepiece. We've got no one really as strong as him. And Richards is out as well, so... Our defence is looking a bit weak, so he might drop them back. And you're right, we might play deep. We might play, I'd imagine four at the back, which we haven't done we've done all season. Mm. But it will be interesting to see if he's that confident and goes with his usual. But I can't see it. Not without Mark, not without the solid wall there.
Yeah. Outside chance of Europe?
No, where have you got? Well, if we win the FA Cup, do we go into Europe?
Oh, you do if you go to if you win the FA Cup. Yeah,
that would be the only chance, I think. Yeah, that would be interesting. Of course, South London in Europe. Jesus.
Go on then, charity bet we got coming up later on. Give us a score for weekend. You said draw. What are you going for?
Draw 2-2.
2-2.
2-2.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Andre Vincent. Charity bat time. Nobody predicted the 0-0 at Old Trafford, so we stay on £1,300 raised for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They'll be back outside the Etihad before the Palace game under the bridge near Asda, so go and see them with a donation if you can. They don't have many collections left this season, so let's try and make it a big one if we can as well. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles to try and raise as much as we can for them. We heard from Vinny, he's gone for a 2-all draw. That's 12-1 and £120 if he's right. Gaz, give us a good news, Mike.
I can't remember what I told you yesterday. Was it 3-1?
4-1.
4-1, 4-1. I was even more optimistic yesterday.
There we go. 18-1 if you're right. £180. KC, are we going back to tradition though after I've talked you away from it so much this season?
Yeah, I've gone for 6-1 because I need to have some semblance of a frisson of excitement heading towards the ground on Saturday. So yeah, let's hope. Despite all available evidence to the contrary, I think we're going to win 6-1.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens, but if it does, 80-1, so £800 if you're right. So fingers crossed, everyone. Got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and for information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now to finish, we've heard this week that season tickets and match day ticket prices for next season will be frozen. An extraordinary meeting with City Matters was held last week. There was a protest ahead and during the opening minutes of the Leicester game, and an open letter was also sent to the chairman in February all about ticketing issues. Now the club have announced no rises for next season. KC, this feels like a win for the fan groups.
Just to clarify, just because you've not lost doesn't mean that you've won.
Okay.
So I think it's great news in terms of the ticket price freeze. I think it's terrible news in terms of what it's taken for us to actually get the club to sit down with City Matters. I think it's a tremendous victory for collective action. The fact that it was a combination of the guys who negotiated by City Matters, the nine or 10,000 or so fans that waited outside on the concourse, and all the other pressures that you've mentioned that I've immediately just left behind when I'm trying to list them off. But at the same time, it's incredibly...
That it's taken those pressures to get that outcome, you mean?
Yeah, and it's not even, they haven't addressed the majority of the points within the letter, within the open letter. What's going to happen? Are they going to release new season tickets? Myself and Gareth have got kids. Are we ever going to be able to buy season tickets for our children? I think it's really short-sighted, poor business from the club as well. In terms of long-term thinking, how are you going to get new fans through the door that are going to be loyal, that are going to turn up every week? I think the way that they communicated it without a statement, and also the fact that obviously the day after the protests, to go to City Matters and say we're going to do a 2.8% inflationary pay increase only is quite frankly disgusting. Does that mean that we can have, backdated for the past like 10 years and have all of the previous pay increases? Can they be reduced to what the inflationary rate would have been? Mm. I think they are completely out of touch. And I'm just sick to death of them. And I just want to knot their heads together because I think they're behaving like spoiled children and they're pathetic. The actions from the club, and I think that this is just the start, and hopefully there's more to come because I want us to build a football club as a fan base where my children and my friends' children could go to games in future, and my friends don't have to worry about paying for bills or paying to go for City because the club are just trying to rinse them out of every single penny that they possibly can. And I think they just need to... Football's a huge business. Sorry to be going on a bit of a monologue, but football's an incredibly huge business. But it's not like any other business.
In the era that we're living in currently, where prices have never been higher, and I mean, the phrase cost of living crisis almost means nothing now because it's existed for as long as it has done. But in the era where that is a thing... who is best placed to absorb the rising costs of modern life? Is it your individual fan, or is it your business that makes millions of profit?
Especially
when that business that makes millions of profit continues to make the point that the fans are important and aren't customers. If we were simply customers, then fine. You take it or leave it. But like, that's not how fans are portrayed.
I was a bit disappointed that some of the responses that I've seen online from the OSC seeming to say that it was all down to the City Matters thing. I think City Matters have done a tremendous job with this, but I think it was a collective effort, and I think everyone involved has recognised it's a collective effort, apart from the OSC, which is very disappointing to see.
The one thing this does underline, and we say so much about football fans, that fans are just customers, they don't have the power in all of this. They do. They do have the power in all of this, because what we've seen is that collective action works.
Yeah, and it's, I think hopefully what this has done, I think, is shown people what leverage we have. I mean, it was a 9-minute, people just didn't take the seats for 9 minutes against Leicester. There's way levels above that we can go to in order to sort of influence the club. I also feel uneasy sort of saying the club went in this, because we're the club, the people who own the club, who own the club in a business sense. So we should sort of recognise that, and Kieran sort of said, like, it can't sort of stop here. I think there's a need to be sort of like, and I think this is what was really good actually about the process, is like, I think the aims were quite clear, and I think we have to sort of keep that. And like, figure out what's the next thing to sort of pick off. And the next thing to pick off has to be match day ticket prices. Like, the games that are being considered Category A games are being, the ridiculousness of them is being reflected in the actual attendances at the games. Is it like 61 quid for Wolves and Palace coming up, 71 quid for Villa on a Wednesday night coming up? These aren't, not that I would condone those prices for any opposition, but those are not Category A type games, and people are voting with their feet, and that's the next thing that needs to be properly sort of worked at.
And how much are they spending on advertising for these games as well? Like, we mentioned before, like, we're all, every time we go online, I'm getting targeted advertising from City. So, like, from a business point of view, like I've touched on before, I think they're very short-sighted, and I genuinely think they are a bit clueless when it comes to a lot of the decision making. But I just wonder, from a business sense, is the marketing and advertising budget completely siloed away from the revenue that's incoming? Because surely weighing one off the other, they're pissing money up the wall to try and recoup some of the money that they would easily just get if they had more fans through the door, a better atmosphere, and then more chance of winning games. It just seems completely counterproductive, every step that they're taking.
Yeah. The other issue with match tickets, Gaz, aside from being Category A, or the number of games that are Category A, they all go on sale in the summer. If you have to decide what games you want to go to in the summer, then, like, if you're going to that Wolves game, you could have paid 60 odd quid for it, but you didn't know it was going to be a Friday night when you bought that ticket.
No, it's ridiculous, and that's how all the scalpers get hold of them, isn't it? Particularly, I mean, that's what creates. So there's all this fake. So there's all this false demand that builds up when the tickets all first, get announced, and then, like, I go through this quite often trying to get tickets for my son. It's like a big game. It's sort of turned into a big game of chicken, because, like, you'll see that there's nothing available, and then as soon as something comes available, it's like, quick, I'll organise that. And then what naturally happens a day before the game, or a couple of days before, people, plans change. They can't go, whatever. And then the ticket exchange thing all of a sudden becomes flooded. It's just completely wrong. I mean, we do have to acknowledge that we've got more fan, more demand than we used to. But the way in which it's sort of being organised is just, it's just nonsense. That whole sort of, the whole sort of area of sort of match day tickets just needs properly looking at, because it's just generating some very odd outcomes.
Yeah. So what next, KC? Like we say, a freeze is good, and we should celebrate that there is a freeze for next season. But that's 1 year of a freeze in a decade of rises. and there's no guarantees beyond this season or next season what happens. So what would you like to see happen next?
So as Gaz touched on before, so I think the clear message about Viagogo is the start, because there was one clear focus point for that one, even though there are several issues that we've all just spoken about there that we need to address. I think we pick them off one by one. I think we pick a game and we go, right, well, this is the next issue, until we get City to actually sit down and address the concerns properly. Because it feels like a paltry effort by the club. Like, a freezing of ticket prices with no addressing of any of the rest of the concerns, in a sort of, it just like a really shit hope that all that will appease them. I think we just need to crack on now until we get I don't really want to say it, until the people, the decision makers at the club actually want to sit down and have proper conversations with the fan groups. And I don't just mean City Matters. I think they need to have a sit down with all of the fan groups that are concerned about this, whether it's 1894, the food bank, the trade union ones. Obviously, I've said I'm disappointed with the OSC and their stance on all this. But I think everybody needs to be involved, and this needs collective action.
Tahir is completely absent. Like, when have you ever known Soriano ever to address the fans directly?
Yeah.
The only time you ever see him do anything in public, it's just about CFG.
Charges? Is that the only one did he speak about the charges and that was it?
I can't even remember that, but it's never ever directed. I mean, he does like public stuff, doesn't he? He'll always be at the business of football, whatever, doing some sort of PowerPoint presentation about how you can have a 20 club model and how great that is. You know, I don't feel the benefits of that. But like, he never speaks. It's weird, like, I won't name them here, but fans are more familiar now with the names of much more junior people at the club who they're sort of like, you know, in conversation with. And, you know, the only sort of engagement at that level we get is like a really stage managed interview with the chairman. It's not Soriano. We get a really stage managed interview with the chairman every, you know, at the end of every season. And that's it.
It is very bizarre. And on top of that as well, when you look, obviously he's been at City a long time. He's not done any of that engagement. His two previous jobs obviously were, you know, Spanair, which was, you know, ended in bankruptcy, and his previous job before that was obviously Barcelona, where you can look at it on one hand and say he's successful, but on the other hand, the board of which he was a part of was voted out with good reason at the time.
Would you recognise him if you walked down Market Street and he was coming down the other way? Would you go, "Oh, that's Ferran Soriano"? I don't think I'd recognise him. He's that absent, really.
I'd stick my leg out.
Buy him some caramelised nuts that someone was selling. Or
I tell you what, walking down Market Street, it's always sweet corn. I always go, "Oh, I got a whiff of sweet corn." Then, "Oh yeah, there's a sweet corn seller. That's why."
I avoid that area of Market Street at all if possible, because it's a bit of a sensory overload, isn't it?
It can be. Right. So that brings us to an end of this week's episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one, to Gaz.
Cheers.
And Casey.
Cheers.
There's a clip coming up of this week's Nostalgia episode. We hastily recorded this week's top 10. That's because it's the top 10 Kevin De Bruyne goals. Kieran Murray and Maka both got really stressed about their picks. So go and give them some love and give that a listen. It's available now for Patreon backers. Just take a look at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to review whatever happens against Crystal Palace. So I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Sullied a little bit for me by the fact that I was walking around a garden centre in Warrington with my girlfriend and her family watching it on my phone.
Was it Bent's?
Yeah, it was Bent's, yeah. Oh, what a garden centre, though. Amazing. My favourite Kevin De Bruyne's goal was scored while I was watching about it.
Was he there?
No, he was in St James's Park.
He was banging it in at St James's, yeah.
But I'm sure he has visited it because it's
fancy for him, I reckon.
Yeah, well, man. If you haven't visited Bent's Garden Centre, I would highly recommend it, folks. So yeah, I was watching it on my phone and then thinking. Because it's really awkward walking around, and especially when you're with a family partner. So I'd watched that, thought, yeah, right, we're nothing stopping that. That must be 3 points in the bag. And then to kind of change to notification settings coming in for the rest of the game, and then see that we hadn't won, it was disastrous. I wish it had led to 3 points, and I wish it kind of like been there instead of walking around through through rhododendrons.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.